Welcome Director Thomas Robsam and DOP and co-director Asleg Holm to the Picture House podcast, and congratulations on Aha the movie, a 5-year in the making, truly insightful and brilliant documentary about a band who really were and remain completely peerless.
Satt på en sån liten bedsit I London och skulle visa låter då.
We didn't have a plan B because plan B you already started doubting plan A.
Klarer dere å bli verdensberømt?
Ja.
The first time a Norwegian group has made it big all over the world.
Suddenly we were going to Australia with thousands of people at the airport. How do I handle all this?
Even after 35 years, would I be right in saying, Thomas, that no musician or band in Norway has ever achieved that kind of success before or since?
Yeah, definitely. Nothing near. There are a few DJs nowadays like Alan Walker and Kygo who are very successful. But as for bands, nobody's near still today.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I know it wasn't quite the documentary you intended to make because you were hoping to do an in the studio making of the next album. But would you say it's the equal curse and blessing of documentary that you have to go with what you're presented with? And can you tell us about the experience of having to let go of any control, especially, I think, in dealing with Aha?
Yeah. You know, you never know exactly what you're going to get when you make a documentary. And that's the nice thing about it. I think maybe sometimes the documentaries are trying almost to tell the story they want to tell instead of telling the story that actually happens when you are shooting. And so I knew that there were conflicts in the band, and I knew that, we would probably, but I wasn't even sure if we were going to get them to talk about it, because they've done it in books and in interviews. But maybe, you know, when they decided to actually let us do the film, I was thinking maybe they've decided now to not talk about these things at all. And so, it took like 10 minutes or something when I started to do the separate interviews with them before they started on their own. I didn't even have to start asking. And then, of course, we had no idea. We were hoping that they would go in the studio together. We were hoping that something would happen that would surprise us. And, of course, it did. And I was quite sure that bringing Asdag into the project as a co-director and director of photography, I would get some special moments where she could be alone with them separately in the car or in the wardrobe or in the hotel room, and just to be two in the room brings out something else. And Aslak had done that brilliantly in a film called Cool and Crazy many years ago, and I really wanted to bring her into the project, and so now she can tell maybe a little bit of how she worked to try to help me to get this moment.
Yes, please, Aslak, because I felt that they were quite guarded and then they really let you in. And was that your experience?
Yes, I think it's very interesting because they are so three strong individuals. And it was a challenge for me and Thomas to get close to them. But at the same time, when we started shooting and I could go with them alone with the camera, it was easier to get intimate. And I also think what the film shows is the creative process is quite challenging because they have so high musical ambitions. So in a way, making a documentary about this creative process was very interesting because I think what the qualities that have made this great music, it's also the qualities that also creates conflict in the band. So in a way, this dualism, I think, is interesting for a documentary. And I think also me and Thomas, we had different roles in the project that gave something to the film. Thomas is excellent as a musician too, and it was so nice with the poetry in the film that he has created with the animation and so on. So when I could focus on the characters, we have this story, I think, which had as a, yes, it was strong and also great music at the same time.
Yes, fantastic material to work with, without a doubt. But to sort of narrow it all down and bring it all into that succinct storytelling was quite an achievement. And Thomas, you know, even using the animation, I thought you handled it beautifully. You know, tell me about bringing that into the mix.
Yeah, the thing was that, you know, you always know that when you make a documentary about such a long lifespan, there will be a lack of material in the early years, you know, before a band gets famous. And so I was worried that we would have to use the same still photography like 10 times or something like that. So I was thinking, how can we get around that? And I also knew that there were some nice stories when they were really young, how mm-hmm. Paul and Mags met each other when they were really young and so on. So I was thinking, oh, maybe I can use the animation style from Take On Me and use animation to tell some of those early stories. But at the same time, I was thinking maybe that's a very cheap idea, maybe it's too obvious. And I guess, you know, if someone had said that, oh, but that's a too obvious idea, you should just cut that out, I would probably just take it away, because we are so easily, you know, losing confidence. But I also had this other idea, and that was that their fate is now to go on stage and perform Take On Me. You know, they can never get, so they will be this cartoon band from the 80s, no matter how hard they try to do things differently. And that's, you know, both a luck and a curse at the same time. So I also had a very clear idea about how I wanted to end the film. The only thing we did not get room for was that I also had this idea about that each of them had kind of a dream, of a life either outside AHA or, you know, Morten, for example, it's very important for him to get away, to be alone sometimes, yeah, just with himself. So I had one idea for that, and I had some very early ideas about what I could make with Paul and Max. But since they were so unavailable, it was so hard. I mean, not unavailable in that way, because we did get the interviews we wanted. We did get, you know, to follow them and have one day or more than one day following each of them and everything. So that was not a problem. But to get them to do something that was a bit more scripted, you know, these dream sequences, that was much harder. And I kind of gave that up. So that's the only animation part that I didn't follow through. And that was maybe also because we realized we had so much material. And, you know, we had also other ideas. Aslaug had one idea that she suddenly started filming me sometimes when I was texting to try to get an interview, or when I was frustrated because they changed the plan. So when I managed to get two of them to agree on something, and then the third one ruined the whole thing. And also the manager always saying, no, it's never going to happen. You know, we're not going to make the film. And, you know, and we tried, and we had the idea that maybe it should be about the filmmaker trying to make the film and not succeeding. But in the end, the only part that was real, for real, was me asking about new music a couple of times and getting almost the same answer, because they were not that unavailable. So we couldn't, you know, it wouldn't be honest. But that's part of making documentaries again. You know, I was like, suddenly thought maybe that's part of the story. And then we shoot a lot of that material. And we even, you know, are now aware that this is how we want to make the film. But then in the editing, it didn't take us much time until we realized that there was no room for it. And it wasn't really honest, because it wasn't that hard to get to them, actually. So that's what happened during a documentary process.
It's really, really interesting how you have to find that hook, isn't it? you know, and you must go in with some expectation, and to have that constantly challenged, Aslak, I mean, is that part of the joy, I guess, of being a documentarist, is to find that special thing that finally unlocks the story, even if it's completely not what you were expecting?
Yeah, I think it's really, really interesting. And it's good that characters give us resistance, that we have to fight for the shots. And I also think what the underlying theme is, they are kind of fighting for the narrative about AHA. Each of them have their own story. So I think that's because they are so open with us. They want us making the film, telling their story, Magne's story, Morten's story, or Paul's story, and they have different perspectives. So that is also interesting when we are making the film, how we change perspective and tell the story about the band through each of them. It's kind of a globe which you are changing. So I think that was really interesting, this dualism, that they are fighting for their high musical ambitions, but at the same time, it's a kind of destructive because they are fighting for their own credit and their own story. So that is a good start making a documentary. It's so much energy there.
I definitely got that sense, exactly that you're looking at just three points of view, and there, who knows what the truth is, really, you know. And even just in such simple ways, so the material you didn't need a lot of material to get a lot of insight into, you know, Magnus didn't want to play the keyboards and Paul thought he was great at the keyboards, you know? And that tells you so much, you know. And I thought that what you nailed in on, or what you leaned into, was really, really telling, you know, which is what you need. You did all that incredibly painstaking hard work to nail down those key moments. Like I love the moment in the car with Morten when he read the poem. It could have been a really pretentious moment, if you know what I mean, like, indulgent or whatever, but it wasn't. It was incredibly moving, actually.
Yes, and those golden moments, I think what Thomas said was to just let the camera be in front of the character. And it's like in jazz, you have to capture the silence too, you know, these pauses. That's where the melody is. So when I was sitting in the car with Morten, it was so important just to be silent and capture his personality, characters, and his poetry. So he's really a strong character. So you have to just be there with the lens and capture it, capture him as this strong guy he is, and also had these enormous musical ambitions.
Just reminded me, you know, the fascination of documentaries, that moments like that can only happen if you're patient, if you ask them to go in the car for another round. And, you know, I guess at one point they asked us, you know, how many shots do you need of an empty corridor with two cameras? Because we were standing there just waiting for one of them to come out of the door. Or how many times do you have to follow us in the car? And also, as I noticed, you know, not being in the car all of those times, but when I watched the material, is that it's easy to say, because I always said to us, like, don't ask anything, just sit there. And but sometimes that makes the whole situation very uncomfortable. So with some of them, it's really hard to just not say anything, because they are wondering what's happening. You know, shouldn't you be asking me something? So I guess sometimes I was like, just felt you had to ask something just to break a complete, strange, awkward silence. But of course, then people are different. For Paul, it's much more difficult to talk. With Morten, it's very difficult to make him not talk, you know. And Mag sometimes just wants to read his book or whatever and not be, you know, I don't care about your film. So that's of course a challenge through the whole film, you know, that it's not a very natural situation, and we are still trying to make it feel very natural, and to try to make them, even though they've had cameras in their face their whole life, to realize that in this case it's something different, because we're not trying to get some shots and put it together. We're actually filming nothing, because after 30 hours something might happen.
And also, sometimes in that nothing, it reveals so much, doesn't it? Like, you know, with their relationship, I felt sad that they weren't happier, but also I thought, you know, within this sort of tension and this long fought out marriage that they've been in, it works for them.
Yeah, I think there's kind of a loneliness there, but at the same time, I also think it's love in the bottom. Even if you are really fond of some persons, you also have these strong emotions, and then you also have conflicts. But that's because they are aiming, have so much musical ambitions. So they are all the time in a creative process, and that is quite challenging. But in the bottom, I think there is love, actually. Even if Morten said this, the band is not based on friendship, but I think there are a kind of love in the bottom, just like a marriage. You have to stick together to know if you are going to capture these musical golden moments that they have, because each of them haven't reached the same musical career, each of them. So they have to stick together to just make this fantastic music, I think.
I agree with Morten that it's not based on friendship, but they are clearly family. You know, so friendship is not the right term, it's family. They are forced together because they got this baby when they were really young called Take On Me. and they have to care about, and sometimes they hate that child. Unfortunately, or some of them, but then they just realize that that's our fate, you know, and they take their breaks, and they're going to take another break now, probably, because they always do after a while. And I think I'm hopeful that when they've gotten so old that they have forgotten all their quibbles and the 80s and everything, they will make great music, because they don't even know why, why did we argue, or did we argue?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you can't manufacture that chemistry easily with other people. I mean, it really is so unique to them. And that's definitely what I got, was everything that they experienced, from being small boys to Morten and Max, you know, that unbelievable thing about the father's plane crash. You know, there's just this symbiosis that runs through all of them and their relationship with each other that is just those three. And in a way, I was thinking, how have they not gone completely mad? And the fact that they're all healthy and alive, and they're not, you know, because they literally are the only people experiencing this, which is often the case with all bands. But I think with a-ha, particularly because they're Norwegian and no other Norwegian has done this, it's, you know, quite an incredible thing that they've done.
Yeah, they... So some people ask when we travel around with the film, like, there's not much sex, drugs and rock and roll in that band. Is that because you kept it out? And I'm to say, no, they're Norwegian. They've had sex a few times because they have children, but no drugs and only occasionally rock and roll. They've tried a couple of times, but they're mostly a Norwegian pop band. And quite healthy, but still a lot of silent treatment and a lot of long emails. But they've never physically beat each other, you know. And sometimes when I've said to Paul, who was the one that was kind of like, who cares about our conflicts, you know, you should keep that out of the film. And I said, but have you ever seen a great documentary without conflicts? And have you ever heard a great band without conflicts? And he agrees. But that's all because of the drugs, you know, it doesn't count.
But I also think they are very disciplined. They have this strong discipline in their way of living. And if you see Morten on tour, he is really like an athlete. He eats very healthy and he has a great shape, and also get these pauses and silence. And Magne, he's really social guy, and also creates meaning when he is on tour with different themes with the backing band. And they are going visiting churches, for example, and see on the art. So he creates meaning in his seeking for art, I think, in both paintings and music. And Paul, he is so obsessed by making this new brilliant song. So he's all the time creating new music and writing. And in between, he plays tennis. He's actually a good tennis player.
Yeah, I mean, it's phenomenal how well they look. And it reminded me of the music documentary Rush. I don't know if you saw that one, where you know, Rush are a Canadian band. So then I think the Canadians and Norwegians might be quite similar in that, you know, living in the Arctic conditions or something. They have sort of, and they've all been married to the same women, and, you know, and they are friends. But it is what I loved about that documentary and this one as well is that you just see the heart, the actual hard work of being in a successful pop band is off the scale, you know. And I think that I really got that. And often people look at AHA and might think, you know, pop is just such a throwaway medium, you know, it's right here now kind of thing, and then you chuck it in the bin. But really, I was marveling at how hard they worked to become successful and then to stay successful, and how they were treated. Like the back catalogue, that, you know, that huge archive of, you know, all the interviews and things like that, you know, how disrespectful some of the interviews were. Like, you know, that one of Morton being asked to strip, it just made me almost want to cry. So tell me about how you pinpointed things like that in going through the archive, Thomas.
Yeah, well, you know, I watched, I don't know how much archive, and I was also a little bit annoyed by the fact that with YouTube now, people can watch everything. But on the other hand, I then thought that we are kind of choosing the best bits and putting them in where we really want them. And that was one example, you know, that it's strange because AHA were kind of pop stars by coincidence. Now, some might say, no, it was a fabricated thing. And some Norwegians said that after the breakthrough, that it wasn't even a Norwegian band, it was just someone in London that put this together. Now, it wasn't even London, it was in the end Los Angeles, but it wasn't done like that at all. Mm. You know, because Paul and Mags traveled over, just the two of them. And since the other two didn't go with them, they had to buy a drum machine. And having a drum machine and a synth, which is all they could kind of bring over, they became a synth pop band. I mean, also because they saw that synth pop was kind of the thing and they liked the music, they liked the soft cell and so on. But had all four gone over, they would have stayed a rock band. And then having Morton over, you know, when Morton was younger, he had long hair, he sang in a blues band, he didn't look like a pop god at all. But then being in London, he started, you know, he wanted to be more fashionable. And then people started saying, oh my God, he looks fabulous. And suddenly they were a great looking band and a cartoon band. And that was also a coincidence because this A&R man from Los Angeles came to London and he saw these pictures and said, my God, what kind of band is this? And then he heard the music and he said, maybe this could work with this animator, you know. And then suddenly you're on top of the of Billboard and you are a pop band and you are photographed all over these pop magazines and so on, and that's not really who you want to be. But it's too late, you know. You think you can change that, but you can't. So now you're stuck with not the most credible band name in the world. And you look too good to be credible. You have a tremendous success, but what you really want is respect as musicians, as composers. And so that's what they then tried, you know, as you can see in the film. And it's really hard, you know, to change the perspective of how people look at the band. You two were an alternative band from the beginning, and Depeche Mode managed to change and become a rock band. And The Cure also was a very credible underground small band in the beginning, but AHA just started on the top and kind of worked their way down. So that's, you know, so that's, I guess, looking back, they wish they had, you know, maybe not been so successful at once so they could build up something that was more credible and more long lasting and that would be respected more. And that's Paul's big project, you know. And has always been. And that's why he's saying in the same interview, when she says, but can you be more successful than this? And he said, that's not what it's about. It's about making something that will last forever. You know, Beatles were and Jimi Hendrix were their big heroes when they were younger, and those artists and bands are, you know, they will kind of never disappear. And I guess especially Paul really wants his songs and Aha to be part of rock and pop history.
And I also think that is really touching in the end of the film, because as Thomas said, we knew what was the ending, the start and ending of the film. And that is a kind of take on me was their destiny. And they were in a trapped in a box. So in the end, when we see them backstage before they enter the stage, you can see they are 35 years old, older. It's but at the same perform the same song. So it's kind of touchy that it's the same guys, but they are just a little older in the animation too. And that I feel is really, I feel I know them. And I think many people that have seen the film, they love the guys. They are fond of them because they feel they know them. It's a kind of our guys in Norway.
I felt watching it, I thought it was really lovely to be reminded of that era of what it was to be a pop phenomenon, which it doesn't really exist in quite the same way anymore. And also just to really understand that, you know, these three men are extremely talented at what they do, and they work very, very hard, and they deserve their success. And, you know, and also just to see the inside that they, you know, life isn't, you know, pop star's life is really, really not a bed of roses at all behind the glamour, you know, and all your sort of expectations and ideas of who they might be are not true at all. And I wonder if you think that they're going to make the documentary, would you be allowed to film them making a live album or an album in the studio? What do you think, Thomas? Will that happen?
Yeah, as I said before, I guess they would have to forget a lot about their past in order to invite me and us log in again. I'm not really sure if they will ever make an album together, you know, being in the same room and really kind of feeding on each other's talents. Because they've for so many years now done it differently. They've done it separately for more than 20 years, and they did it together for only like 10 years. And even then it was together-ish. So I guess to break that and get together, and that was something that surprised me a little bit, because I had been kind of fooled maybe by the album Foot of the Mountain. I thought that they had come together to make that as an album together again after having made quite a few albums separately. You know, Morten recording in Stockholm, Mags recording in Oslo, Paul recording in New York, and only Morten being on all songs. That happened for many albums from 2000 and on. But with Foot on Mountain, I thought they had done it together again. But I realized that was just in the very early stages of that album. And then it just was completed separately. And that happened again with Cast in Steel. And now also with the album that's finally coming this year, they've also made all the songs separately, even though they actually record them together. There's not much of a collaboration. So even though Morten wants it, and I guess all three actually say that that's what they want. So that's the funny thing. They want the same thing, but they can't agree on how to do the same thing or if that actually works, if they try. And I guess they have to change their attitude with each other. And I think that goes all three ways, and not just that some of them think that Paul has to change, and Paul thinks that Max has to change, and Morten thinks that everybody else has to change. I think they all have to realize that a change must come from themselves in order to actually be able and to really respect the other two, because they really don't respect each other. You know, and they all three are dissatisfied with their own role in the band and feel that the other two don't respect them. But they are also themselves not respecting the others. So if they could start there, it would help. But if it's going to happen, you know, that's the sad thing. I really don't think so, unfortunately.
I was hoping for the sequel. Aslak, do you feel a bit more hopeful that they might record again? What do you think?
I think maybe Thomas should be the producer.
Yeah.
On your record, he's a really good producer.
And you understand that you completely understand the mentality now.
Yeah, because he can see this, you know, the energy between the three guys. So you have to have another kind of process in creating the music. So then it maybe could go, but then they have to have this curiosity to do it. So I'm not sure of that. But I think maybe Paul is a little bit, he can do anything, I think, to just create a perfect song. But maybe Magne, it goes so hard in the process, and you can see in the film that he suffers from it in the end, he gets sick of it. So they have to find another way of doing it if it's going to work.
I really hope so. And just to finish up, so this is not a question to do with AHA, but what it kind of is, in that I think to be documentarists like you are, and to make such an incredibly painstaking and beautiful and full of love film, I want to know where your love of film started. What was it that you saw that changed your life? What film changed your life?
Well, as for music documentaries, it was certainly Let It Be, which I saw when I was 10 years old, the film about the Beatles recording their almost last album. And I was so fascinated by the fact that we could be there while they recorded the music. I mean, I was such a big Beatles fan, and it was also mythical. So the fact, and you know, all the other films about the Beatles were kind of fiction, you know, they played the Beatles, but in this case it was them for real, sitting in the studio rehearsing, and they even argued, which shocked me, you know. So even though I wasn't sure I was going to be a filmmaker when I was 10 years old, that film really stuck with me. So the dream of making that kind of film has been there ever since, and I've still not made that film, as you know. But that was really important for me as for making music documentaries. Then there has been other films that has changed my life in other ways. I once saw a documentary about how animals were treated, and I became a vegetarian, and I started, you know, making films, similar films myself. And that was a world. I also saw that film when I was really young, and I was absolutely shocked about, you know, I really didn't know that's how animals were treated. So the film just opened up something totally new. And that says something about what films can do. They can, you know, teach you something that you were totally unaware of. If it's what kind of topic is not important, but for me, that was the thing. And so, yeah, films have really, really changed my life, both as a person and as a filmmaker.
For me, it started actually with when I was studying at college, taking still photos, pictures, and I captured this photo of an old woman. She was 95 years old, but she looked suddenly as she was 15. It was a golden moment. And then I understood, oh, maybe that should be my destiny, just making stories. And when I started on film school, I saw, of course, Taxi Driver with Martin Scorsese, and it was about this character. And this has fascinated me all the time. Later also, Godfather, I mean, that's my favorite film. And it's about the complex dynamic in the families and how characters are on each other. I think that's really fascinating to just try to understand people and through the lens capture this kind of interesting people.
And I think it's interesting listening to both of you, how that experience for both of you has created this film where we see the humanity behind the pop stars, you know, and we learn something incredibly new about these people. Thank you so much for joining me today and for having this wonderful conversation about AHA the movie. I wish you every success with it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.